This is a repeat of a previous program.
It's not pointless to stand up against the might of this machine. If enough of us do it, and enough of us vote. There's only 36% of the population voted last election.
Local body election.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very poor in national as well. But when only a third of you turn out, you get what you vote for. And if you didn't vote, don't bleat. You got what you got. All of the money and all of the power imploded into these council-controlled organisations. And all of a sudden, behind closed doors, decisions are pumped out. No proper consultation. No thinking. Just some dirty deals done behind closed doors. I don't like it.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre. Today I am interviewing John Tamahere. JT, as he is affectionately known, is one of Maridom's greatest enigmas. Whether it has been battling in the political arena, where he served two terms as a government minister, or going toe-to-toe with iwi leadership over the rights of urban Maori, JT has never wavered from advocating for the rights and mana of his people. Briefly, John was born 10th of 12 children and was the first to attend university, graduating with a double degree in arts and law. He won the Hauraki electorate for Labour and was appointed chair of the Maori Affairs Select Committee. In 2005, he left Parliament, returning to whānau Waipereira, where he has grown the organisation's balance sheet by 90%, while establishing Waipereira as a local, national and internationally recognised whānau, who deploys services across an integrated framework. I have watched John Tamahere from a distance but became especially interested in his research on Auckland Council when I read an article of his in the Herald on November the 9th. In the article, JT mentions Penny Bright's relentless requests for Council to open its books. As Alan Preston and I have a petition now in Parliament asking, in Penny's words, that the House of Representatives undertake an urgent inquiry into whether Auckland Council has failed to comply with the statutory requirements of Section 17 of the Public Records Act 2005, I contacted John to see if he would meet me. Since our meeting, John, I've discovered a petition by Susan One that requests that the House of Representatives conduct an independent inquiry into Auckland Council's performance, including financial accountability, and then pass legislation reforming Auckland's local government. So people are beginning to wake up to Auckland Council's lack of financial performance, particularly around CCOs, council-controlled organisations, or costly creations, as John has referred to them. Both Susan Wands and my petition have been sent to the Governance and Administration Committee in Parliament. New Zealand law is very clear on the requirements for transparency in public spending. Section 17 of the Public Records Act 2005 says, requirement to create and maintain records. Every public office and local authority must create and maintain full and accurate records of its affairs in accordance with normal prudent business practice, including the records of any matter that is contracted out to an independent contractor. However, John has discovered over $1 billion that needs disclosure in the last annual reports. Welcome, John Tamahere. It's good to have you on the show. Private procurement or contracting out of public services, formerly provided in-house under the public service model, is now often done under contract management. If there's no cost-benefit analysis which proves that privatisation is more cost-effective for ratepayers, then questions must be asked. Would you agree?
Of course. I mean, we're now 30 years down the track from the trickle-down economics or supply-side economics, as they call it. And we're starting to now achieve the perverse results of that. That's seen in terms of cartels or oligarchs operating. It's across the whole of the economy, whether it's at Bunnings and Fletcher's control. Not only at the port, where they ratchet the prices up, but of course in the warehousing and retailing divisions of materials to construction. You then proceed to banks, and there's four banks. Kiwi Bank is not scalable enough to provide any competition to the four Australian banks. You then go to the five electricity companies. They've 50% privatised. So prices are set. There's a cartel that operates. And so the little guy in this country wakes up thinking that there's this massive competition that's going to keep prices low when most prices are fixed by the way the system presently operates them. And so you've got perverse results across the whole of the economy. And the only people that are going to suffer from that are people earning under $80,000 a year, $40 an hour.
Well, I don't know too many people earning much over $40 an hour.
Well, you know, that's the average wage from the Department of Statistics as we speak is $49,400 average through the whole of New Zealand, and that's around $25 an hour.
That sounds more like it, yes. And, I mean, Auckland Council have said that they're going to have pay the living wage as opposed to the minimum wage to all their workers, but they actually haven't got as many workers as we might think, because everything's contracted out to Watercare, which is a council controlled organisation, CCO, for example. They will contract to companies like Downer, for example, and I don't think that you'll find that they're paying that much.
Well, the biggest problem we've got is the huge profits that are being made, and predominantly a lot of that money goes offshore rather than is invested here. The gap between senior executives' pay and middle management pay and those that actually make the money on the ground is just ridiculous in this country. And so, you know, we've got to have a national conversation about fairness and justice, and often poorer folk are always looking in the mirror, blaming themselves for not being able to earn enough to just keep things ticking at home, when the whole system is sort of geared against them. We've seen the fastest increase of people paid over $100,000 a year overtly in the six council-controlled organisations over the last 7 years. It's just been incredible. Furthermore, we've seen a whole range of dollars. For instance, let's look at Auckland Transport. $666 million a year is pumped out under what they call special services or contracts. Some of them will be very worthy, but because they won't declare exactly how that dollar value is put out, it often goes to monopolists. And Fulton Hogan's a monopolist, right? Decent, and I'm not bagging up. What I am saying is that they hold a monopoly, and so they set everything from wages in that whole economy. As soon as you get companies able to set wages and salaries and what you can bid on contracts, it's no longer a tender system. It's you bid within this range or you don't get the contract.
And to my mind, the people who get the contract are going to be the people who pay the lowest wages, because that's a way that they can save money when they're bidding for a contract.
Well, you bid down to win cash flow. Bidding down to win cash flow doesn't make a good business, and it doesn't make a good employer. And ultimately, if you're driving people to those sorts of behaviours, they will go bankrupt. And you're starting to see some of the bigger construction companies going this way. In a low interest, easy to borrow environment, you're starting to see construction companies who have done that go to the wall. The problem with that is the little guys, the little chippy, the little electrician, the little plumber, you look at the debt that's owed to the little guys. They've put their houses on the line to just start a business. They've hooked up with these people. And then all of a sudden, when the big boy goes bust, all the little guys go down the gurgler. Not
yes.
The big guy.
Yes.
And that's one of the biggest problems we've got.
I know people that have suffered like that,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Most definitely. And people that aren't being paid enough by the council-controlled organisations as well. But then, as you're saying about the huge gap and disparity between the CEOs and the people working, Auckland Transport, Shane Ellison, earns $579,000 a year, which is almost double what Phil Goff as mayor gets. Now, this is supported by our rates, and these are your facts out of your article.
Yeah, well, the biggest paid guy's on $770,000, if you look further down.
Ports of Auckland, $750,000. Mm. Tony Gibson, yes. Mm. Yes, I know, but I just mentioned Auckland Transport. But, yes, and Phil Goff on $280,000, which is, I mean, a hugely responsible job. And anything he says that's silly can be highlighted. For example, he says he's expressly forbidden from interfering with the commercial decisions making of the port. He's the mayor, and he's forbidden to...
No, he's the mayor, but he also appoints the board.
Right.
He also sets a statement of intents.
Yes.
So it's not fair to say that he has no say. Because if he's on the appointments group that appoints the directors and the chair, you instruct your directors and your board. You're the shareholder, right?
You own the company. So he has a say.
They've got a say. Yes. Phil comes out of an era in New Zealand politics that brought in supply-side economics, and Phil's very responsive to that old methodology. But the emperor's got no clothes on. You know, Phil has to wake up to the fact that it's changed. Just not, in New Zealand's circumstances, because of the size of our economy, we've now got cartels and oligarchs in operation, not competition.
Well, he may have come from the Labour Party, but I don't think you could call him left-wing.
Well, the Labour Party used to have a lot of folk in it that were working folk who were in difficulties and the like, and so they were driven to change society's values. I was lucky enough to be in a generation of New Zealanders who were born and bred in our golden period, where the state provided everything from housing to assistance for jobs. And in fact, in 1972, when Norman Kirk was politicking for office, he made the point that unemployment had rocketed to 576. And this was just unacceptable conduct on the part of any government to allow that to happen. So, you know, this is the world that we were born and bred, and I was, and we were so lucky. All our university fees were fully funded, and it was just a golden era. Now, the people that were the beneficiaries of that changed the game and they pulled the ladder up on others, and I just find that despicable.
Well, yes. The big one being John Key, having been brought up in a state home, and then he sells all the state homes.
Well, there's that. Look, John, I don't bag people for getting out of a state house and doing well. I do if they have turned their back on. Remember, he campaigned on lifting the ability for the underclass, he called them, if you recall. He took a little girl's hand in Mount Ruskell from a state housing era and said, no, this is the underclass that's been produced by Helen Clark. And all's fair in love and war and politics, that's okay, you get that. But under his watch, he put them on steroids, the underclass. So, you know, I mean, we're not all stupid. Look, nice, affable guy, John.
Yes, I've met him.
Yeah. You're a nice, affable guy, but a guy that you find difficult to dislike. But his politics and his policies have led us to this remarkable housing crisis. As well as an impoverishment of income to those earning $80,000 or under.
And, of course, going back to Auckland Council and the council-controlled organisations, most of those workers, bus drivers or whoever they are, will be part of those people earning not enough. Not enough to buy a house, not enough even to eat good food.
No, I think in the last time I looked at the numbers, there's 40% of Aucklanders just couldn't think of getting near a house. The rentals are calibrated, so where their income is, where they're treading water. And so that's what Kiwis in Auckland don't go out and buy 2-minute noodles as a staple part of the diet for fun.
No.
No, and they mix a bit of bully beef here to just make it go. They're not bad parents. They're trying hard, but they're working two or three different jobs. They're treated very poorly. And I don't know how we deprecated so quickly as a people, as a country, doing that to one another.
I think the media is quite responsible for that. It's the way that they portray poorer people makes me, and people on benefits. I mean, I was 16 months on a sole parent benefit, and what do I see? They say all about beneficiaries. They're drug addicts and
you can vilify
nonsense.
You can vilify people who are not of your ilk, don't act like you, don't look like you, don't drink at your soirees. You can vilify them, but here's the problem with today's world. The evidence is now becoming so compelling and so palpable that you can only kick those below you so long and so far down the road, and that's happened. And then, all of a sudden, it's starting to happen to loved ones of theirs. And now they're starting to wake up. So a tipping point is being reached where society has always worked on vilifying different parts of it. And in doing that, it makes others feel a lot better off because they're not the villains. You know? And so some of the people that police a class system the hardest are those that are just above the lowest. Because as long as someone's lower than me, I'm happy. But if we never used to have that narrative in New Zealand, you know? And it only come about where we brought in all these new market tools and that. And at one level, I get it. At another level, we're now a basket case about supply side economics.
When you're saying supply side economics, are you referring to Rogernomics and Milton Friedman, or?
Yeah, that is supply-side economics.
Yes.
The trickle-down economics is...
Yes.
Well, it's Reaganism, it's Thatcherism, and then Douglas put it on steroids here.
Yes.
And could, because it's such a small country and small market. The wake-up call he brought was required at some parts of the industry and economy, but the way it's been ushered in, it's led to the fastest growth of inequality ever in this country's history. And I'll put it to you, probably in any first world country that wants to really reflect on what's happened in the last 35 years.
Yes, well, I think we should be, because New Zealanders have this idea about what New Zealand is and who New Zealanders are, and we're not that anymore.
Yeah, but we can re-seize control, and we can re-seize the narrative, and we can re-implement, compassion and integrity and credibility about that without vilifying one another. And I think that's a doable thing. I think there's an awakening that the emperor's got no clothes on, and we're now allowed to say it without being beat up. We've got a new regime in town.
Well, I very much like Jacinda's statement that she wants to bring kindness into politics. I really, really support that. But she's got to move a few mountains before she can really do that.
Oh, I think the rhetoric's great. They've only been in 12 months.
Yes.
They never stood a chance. They're an unusual collection of what the constituency served up, after the election last year. So I think they then had to mould some form of culture of government when you've got three parties who are quite different for different reasons, and they've just slowly picked themselves up and sorted that out. It'll be very interesting. Leadership next year when the budget comes out, and it's going to be a well-beings budget. And I think the change of the debate in this country, where we look at people's well-beings rather than who they are, but where they are, is refreshing.
Do you think the media will allow that? Because the media, to my mind, is very heavily weighted on supporting National.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. If you look at Talkback, if you look at so-called opinion makers like Hoskins and Garner and all the rest of them, they want to be shock jocks like the Yanks at Fox TV. And I just can't. I just think I find that grating as a Kiwi, where we can't define ourselves properly without searching for some cheap Americana. Deal. And I regret them going down that track. But you know, here's the beauty about Kiwis out there. They're not stupid. And they're waking up. And there's an awakening, as I said.
Well, I really hope you're right. I really do, because something needs to happen. I mean, there's all sorts of interesting solutions. Like in Japan, they have a certain range that the CEO can only earn a certain amount more than the workers. I forget the figure, actually. But and that brings the whole society much better, much fairer society.
Yes, we see, it comes from your own cultural underwrites. And I don't mean Māori, Irish culture. I mean something deeper and more primal and more about your humanity. And so if you can earn enough and live well enough, why continue to build the largesse? You know, when one third of people earning $50 million or having assets of $50 million or more in New Zealand cooked a book to show that they're earning under $70,000 to come in to the lowest tax bracket, that's just a disgrace. That says more about the new rich in this country than it does about anything. And the more you can out that and display that, the better.
Well, accountants, of course, support that, because when I had my business, I was considered a little bit odd for not wanting to try and get tax breaks that were a little bit just borderline. And I said, look, for crying out loud, you know, why would I do that? You know, tax is there for a reason, and I know a lot of people on Facebook disapprove of tax and think we shouldn't have any, but I don't know quite how we could manage without any.
No, you need taxes. The question is are we all paying them fairly and equally? And the answer to that question is absolutely not. Not on the basis of the evidence that I've just given you, which is one third of those that have $50 million in assets or more have cooked the book to show that they're earning under $70,000 to come within the lower tax bracket. That is a rort. And it's a legalised theft in one level, but that has to be changed.
Yes, but whichever government tries to change it, people are going to be screaming.
Well, the rich are well positioned, and often New Zealand prides itself on not having corruption. That's a nonsense. There's, you know, the difference between Mexico City and Auckland City is, in Mexican City, you can see the pesos changing hands. Right?
Yes.
In Auckland City, the procurement of these CCOs and all that, it's so hidden, you know, which is why we need an integrity unit set up, because there's just too much dodginess. There's too much. In America, they call it graft, which is a bit different to overt fraud, but it ultimately leads to fraud.
Well, you've mentioned in your article over $1 billion is unaccounted for. Where's it gone in these CCOs? We should be able to see where all our money is going, and then, as ratepayers, we should be able to say, hey, this isn't right, or yes, this is good, whichever we feel.
Yeah, look, because we haven't protected whistleblowers, and we haven't protected people who know that what's happening is not right. Because if you don't do anything about it, it then builds itself into a living culture of perceived righteousness. And it's not. It is just because this is the way it's done, this is the way the business is done, you become dumbed down into believing it is right. If it is corrupt, if there's dirty deals going between mates out the back door, if tenders are rorted, if tenders are set so they're specifically targeted solely to a few of your mates, that's a rort. That's corruption in anyone's language. So you got to, because we've grown so quickly and have given so much largesse to so few, to control, you've got to be very careful to believe that they are beyond reproach. It's not true.
No, but I don't think that they would think that they were doing dirty deals when they've asked somebody to come for dinner at the Sky Tower or come to my beach place for the weekend and let's go out in the boat. They don't kind of look at that as being a dirty deal, but in fact...
It leads to one, yes. It always leads to one. No, that's graft.
Yes.
Okay, so in the United States, they've come down on that very heavily. I'll give you an example. I was over there pitching a New Zealand IT company, and we were hosting some of the biggest purchasing agents to a dinner at New Zealand Embassy, outstanding embassy, right next door to the Vice President's, actually, the Kiwi one. But the point is that before we could do that, we had to put a list up of what we were providing. And we weren't allowed to provide too much largesse. It had to be very basic. And they had to fill out a form saying that they had been wined and dined at the New Zealand Embassy and that there was a pitch. They were there at such and such a time. They were provided such and such food. Now, they're very clear that all these little things that Kiwis take for granted, like, let's go, come to my box and watch the All Blacks play.
Yes.
Drink my wine and my beer. Well, the day you start that, okay, this is a slippery slope.
Yes, yes.
I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying Mike Moore said this to me when I went to politics and Parliament. And he said to me, John, you will get wined and dined and fated and that, but by all means, it's part of the job. But you've got to then drink their wine, have their company, eat their food, you walk down to this house and then vote them down. Vote them down. And I was so taken with his, because he's a working class bloke too, come through a very difficult background with solo mum. So he understood.
Yes.
You know, but he understood basic ethics.
Yes.
Yeah. This is not about the Ten Commandments. This is about just basic ethics, basic values.
Mm. Yes, that you can't be bought.
Should never be bought.
Looking at Auckland Council and how it's working, with Stephen Town as the CEO and all these council-controlled organisations, CCOs below it, how much of this is going on, would you think?
Well, I don't know. And why I don't know is because there's no systemic that might let me know, apart from a couple of whistleblowers at Auckland Transport. And that was covered. They tried to cover that up too.
Yes.
Right. So, because there's this myth in New Zealand that there's no corruption, right?
Yes.
There's corruption everywhere. And to pretend that it's not here and to paper it over, to pretend that we're hunky-dory, because you don't want to be caught as a CEO having corruption in the team. So what you do is you get rid of them, give them a nice testimonial, and release them on the next poor, unsuspecting employer. That's called cleaning the house in Kiwi terms, right? But it's not honest and it's not straight. And just because your systems were caught napping and someone's taking you for a ride, isn't a get-out-of-jail card for them to be then passed on to the next unsuspecting employer?
No, it's certainly not. Would you say then that we should have the right to ask those questions?
No, the ratepayer,
yes,
must have the visibility of exactly who gets what, for what, why, and through what process. I don't know why that's such a big thing.
I know, but they were prepared to take Penny Bright to the cleaners for asking the question.
Yeah, well, you know, God bless Penny, and battled, and just keep... She just kept getting run into brick walls. And,
yes.
But to her credit, she stayed the course right up to her last breath. And so you need folk like that to just be a shining light. And then however dim it gets, because it got very dim there because she got beat up a lot. But she sort of held the line. I think, you know, there's few and far between that will do that.
Well, we need to continue this work, you see, John.
Yeah.
You and I and others, to say, hey, what's going on here? Because when we became a super city, which was 2011. I wasn't sure whether to believe all the rhetoric that rates would go down and all of this sort of stuff. I really wasn't sure. And so I didn't make a noise. Penny was making a noise. I was just sort of sitting, watching, thinking, I don't know, this is too hard, which I regret now. I did make a noise about water care, and I went to a protest, and there were about 40 of us, saying, we're now not going to pay our rates, our water rates in with our rates, we're going to pay our water rates separately. And everybody just took it, like lying down with a, like a lamb, you know, and the rates have got, the water rates have gone up and up and up, and our ordinary rates haven't gone down.
Yes, but you see, you're dealing with monopolies, and the day you deal with monopolies is the day N, you have to defend yourself individually against the power of your own ratepayer checkbook. And then they've got legions of lawyers and accountants and 240 communications consultants downtown. So you're up, this is what Penny ran into. It was just, you just ran into all the thuggery of that. It is, but to her credit, she just kept going. Now, it wore her down.
Well, she said it killed her.
Yeah, it wore her down. But, you know, there comes a time when you get some saints like that that stand up. And then the arrogance and the entitlement of them, and yet they're ultimately my employee.
Yes, as a ratepayer.
Yeah, and but just the arrogance of these people is just, I've never seen it anywhere in New Zealand like it is with these CCOs.
So what do we as ratepayers do? What can we do about it? We need to unite, don't we?
Well, there's a number of things that need to be done, but the first is awakening. You know, and you have to awaken people's sense of the fact that it's not pointless to stand up against the might of this machine. It's if enough of us do it, and enough of us vote. There was only 36% of the population voted last election. Local body election. Mm. Well, it's very poor in national as well. But when only a third of you turn out, you get what you vote for. And if you didn't vote, don't bleat. You got what you got.
So just imagine if you stood for mayor, how would you encourage the population of not voters to actually do something about it?
Well, you know, we kicked off with this and we're on these things called neighbourhood law watch groupings, right?
Yes.
Now, I'm not a vigilante, but I am saying that your entitlement right in a democracy is going to be very much so determined by your participation in it.
And absolutely.
Don't retire to Netflix and don't retire to Sky TV. All of your rights. You know, I know that it's an antidote to the mundanity of your life and the way in which you've been rorted. And because you're a little person, you always feel, oh, they're always going to run over the top of me anyway, right? But Penny Bright never thought that.
No,
it was just an implacable self-belief. So the first is that you have to awaken in people that if enough of them think the same way and stand up, they will win. And the little folk numbering up will always beat the very rich people that can pervert the course of news and the course of a whole range of other things so they can continue to keep their unequal status. So I think that tipping point is starting to be reached. I think the change of government was a massive relief to that. I think the wellbeings budget next year will set a course on a different trajectory for the country. I think a lot of people will start to awaken, and I want to be on the back of that wave, riding that wave of change, particularly into the biggest city, most scalable global city New Zealand's got. That's Auckland.
Okay, so if you were mayor, what's the first thing you would do? Just hypothetically.
Clean the house. clean the house. clean the house simply means if you've, the only reason why people are being treated so offhandedly and arrogantly is because of the way in which their leadership has permeated those beliefs and that culture. Now, I want to put the public back into the public service. And so the culture downtown has to change dramatically as a consequence. We're not... I don't work for them. They have to understand they work for us.
Right? Yes.
Now, for some unknown reason, this is lost on them. So you've got to wake them up. To do that, you probably have to change a number of the boards that oversee them.
Yes.
And quite dramatically. because when change comes, you've got to make it happen very quickly across the lot, because they're pretty clever people and they'll pervert slow change. So it has to be quite significant change and done very quickly. Part of the safety of that change has to be devolution of more authority and power to the local boards. All of the money and all of the power imploded into these council-controlled organisations. And all of a sudden, behind closed doors, decisions are pumped out. No proper consultation. No thinking. Just some dirty deals done behind closed doors. I don't like it.
No.
And so we've got to do... So that's the first thing you do. You'd clean the house. And you'd reset the standards and the ethics and the behaviour of and expectations of what anyone that earns a right... There's 7,500 people in the main city council that are employed, let alone the tens of thousands of people that are employed in the CCOs, right?
Yes.
So that the whole culture has to change across the whole board. Furthermore, if you're getting a ratepayer contract, you'll pay a livable wage, or don't stump up for the contract.
I absolutely believe
so. You have to start setting some rules.
Yes.
And if you don't, these dirty rats will rip everyone off.
And as far as I know, almost all the ones that are the contracts that I know are actually the contractors are Australian, so the profits are going to Australia, not here, just like the banks.
Yeah, but we're going around circles here because that's exactly where we started.
Yes.
Right? So ultimately it's all linked.
Yes.
Yeah, and we're going to have to do a bunch of things about that. And that's a national office issue. That's a central government issue.
Well, if I was down there, I've said, what would you do if you were mayor? If I was down in Parliament, I'd be working to get the Reserve Bank as the bank that issues money for the country so that it's issued with no interest. I think it would make a big difference.
Yeah, well, a number of people have looked at a number of options there. You know, I'm a great believer in financial exchange checks, because it doesn't matter what you earn or what you move, we all get treated equally.
Yes.
And so rich folk pay more because they move more.
Yes.
And poor folk pay exactly the same on a dollar-for-dollar transfer. So it's called a transfer and exchange tax. You know.
Is that the same as a financial transaction tax or the Robin Hood tax?
It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Okay. So as long as it's fair, though, and that is, but the rich guys won't like that.
Not at all. But actually, we're one of the few countries that doesn't have it, in fact, aren't we?
We have the sacred cow that was bought in between 1984 and 1992. So that was Roger Douglas and then Ruth Richardson. And unless we acknowledge that it has failed, and it has, we're not changing our conducts. And everything from that moment in time is now being embedded in conduct around the place. And it's now the emperor without any clothes on. Like, I can see the guy, warts and all. No one else can.
Right.
But others, but you can. A lot more others.
Well, I'm hoping some of our listeners will. Yeah, because we've really got to do something. And you know, Green Planet FM is always coming up with interviews of people saying, you know, something's got to change here. So this is Green Planet FM, and I'm Lisa Eyre, and I'm in the studio with John Tamahiri, and we're talking about corruption, Auckland Council, what would John do if he was mayor? What else would you do, John?
Well, to keep it safe, your democracy safe, you have to appoint an integrity unit, okay, which is, in effect, an Auckland ombudsman. who is able to investigate allegations of impropriety. And it's only when you get an internal affairs group like that working that there's two things that you can't beat in any business. One is stupid and two is crooked. And sometimes you get them in both one person. but so you've got to define systemics that ensure that the possibility of a stupid or a crooked, the impact of it can be lessened rather than that conduct being built in and accepted. And so to keep the first couple of things safe, that's what I do. I don't intend... if and when I run for mayor, you'll get the full Monty on the package, right? I don't intend releasing my thoughts around policy in totality today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm pretty...
Forewarned is forearmed, you see.
Oh, I see, okay. Well, I think that something has got to change. Auckland's our biggest city. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And some of this is actually from Wellington because they haven't supported supporting the regions. I was down... where was I? I can't think of the name of the place. Anyway, it was small. And just kept driving through and just shop after shop were closed. Yes, and I thought, good heavens, you know. And there were houses there and probably a lot of them empty. And because nothing has been done about business there. Mm. You know, it's all coming into Auckland. And here we can't even manage to have, the sewage system running properly. You know, I live beside the Manukau Harbour and I can't take my dog down after there's been rain. I can't take her down to the beach because the water's polluted. I mean, it had got cleaned up. It was polluted when I moved to that house 19 years ago, and then they put in a sewage treatment system which cleaned up the water. It was fantastic. And now, because there's so much...
Development, yeah.
Development and everything... They can only take the sewage treatment through after heavy rain, three of the five steps that need to be performed before the water goes into the Manukau.
Incredible.
Yeah.
First world country.
But we've got enough money for cycleways.
Mm. You don't like cycleways?
Well, I never see anyone on them. What's the point in having them, paying all that money? It must be some dirty deal in a back room. Well, probably not a back room, in a flash hotel. Some dirty deal that's been done that says, oh, well, you know, we could make some money putting in these cycleways for you. Now, that's going to solve Auckland's public transport.
Well, you know,
it's not coping.
One of the greatest monuments to John Key's policy is cycleways.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
About as successful as the flag.
But that's true. It was one of his sort of magic moments. I can recall it. But
Portage Road in New Lynn, I have never seen a cyclist.
Right.
Never.
I agree with you. No, I live out there and, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, I go down there frequently. So
yeah.
That's
yeah.
why, because I live out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I see them irregularly on a very, very well, very, very expensively framed cycleway around Tauratu Peninsula.
Yes.
There, I see them going up the northwestern motorway on that cycleway, but not in big numbers, right? But what does get me, and I, you know, is all the Lycra guys that Lycra up on a Sunday, they take over the road, that sort of, without due regard to others.
Right.
Without due regard to others. It just does... I've seen it cause road rage.
Mm. Okay. Oh, well, my son was on the Te Atatū Peninsula and Western Motorway yesterday doing right. 80 kilometres on a sort of a track around there. On a Sunday morning.
It's a very popular track, that track, for cyclists.
Yes.
Because it cuts across from the west... across the northwestern motorway through the inlet there, and then you're straight into town and around where Oakley Creek is, Waterview.
Yes.
And then down, you can go down to Point Shears, round through there. So it's a very... And then you can go across to Chamberlain Park. Now, that's going to be halved as well. Another beautiful little scheme, taking away green space in the middle of the town, epicentre of the town. Anyway, the point is, certain cycleways are very heavily used. Big bunches are not.
Well, yes, I mean, and people going to and from work you don't really see that many people going to and from work. So we need, obviously, to get people out of the cars, but then if there's not enough car parking by the trains and the bus station, then how are you going to do that?
You're not.
Yeah. So when I want to catch a train, half the time I can't park to get a train.
No, exactly right. you're starting to do my head in here. You're going round and round circles.
Well, I know, but I mean, this is to get around Auckland.
You're welcome to Auckland.
Yes, and more people. This was my point, that we're getting more and more people here, and we're not looking after Otorohanga. It was. I was in Otorohanga.
Oh yeah.
Weekend.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bless them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, agriculture, horticulture, is no longer labour intensive. There's a lot more automation, and that's from everything from ploughing to seeding to you name it. And so the numbers of folk that used to be required to drive the agricultural horticultural centre are starting to drop dramatically. Forest is the same.
Well, we need to reverse, with agriculture, we need to revert to the organic way of doing things. Mm. Because at the moment, just doing it like factory farming and tipping glyphosate on everything, and then we've all got glyphosate in our systems, and that'll cause cancer in some people, and it's a bit of a disaster there. So I don't think, unless we go back to doing a more organic kind of farming, we're just going to get sicker and sicker. But that's another issue altogether.
Yes, that's right. Can't blame that on
topic. Can't blame that on Auckland Council.
No. God bless God.
So going back to this, if you were mayor, what would you do about recycling?
Well, look, that's a vexed question, because there are so many people with their own agendas around recycling, okay? Now, we all accept that recycling in and of itself is good. The next question where are your recycling plants? What are your carrots and sticks in regard to shifting behaviours? So in terms of plastics and dropping plastic usage, I don't think that's ever going to be one. You know, I think we'll drop back on tonnage, but I think because of the utilitarian value of this product, it's going to remain as a. And we've got to manage around that. The next issue on recycling is the ability to not just look at it as a pricing model, but to price it long term in terms of rewarding communities for doing a good job in recycling. And what I mean by that is, I'll give you an example. When we were kids, there was a levy on each bottle. So we all recycled our bottles, because our rugby league club got the money from our bottle drives. That there was a cost there, but there was a massive community incentive to all come together. And I think we're going to have to look at a range of schemes where communities can reconnect as a and commune for the good of the community in these sorts of projects. And I think recycling gives us a marvellous opportunity to do that. It shouldn't just all be placed to a corporate called Waste Care and Waste Management. There's a cost to democratising the recommuning of communities, and that cost has to be borne. Rather than laid off to multinational corporates who make out that the recycling's going well, then you wake up and find, oh, well, it's gone to a landfill somewhere.
Yes, it's not doing well in Auckland, and the landfills are just about full, and now there's this talk of ruining Dome Valley with a rubbish dump.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've all got to wake up to the fact that as soon as you birth a baby, consumerism increases X percentage, right? Whatever it is. So humankind just has to start to change our rip shit and us sort of mentality where we live for today.
Yes,
rather than plan. And we really love our mokopunas and our grandchildren, but want to bequeath to them something, we have to change ourselves and the way in which we conduct ourselves. And so when you talk about recycling, I just want to talk about resetting our culture as a people in regard to the way in which we commune, and therefore the way in which we handle these very important issues, and not lay them off on a rate payer cost to a multinational who we believe will fix everything, because that's just not going to happen.
Well, I think that's the whole issue, isn't it? Believing that other people are going to fix it instead of taking self-responsibility.
Yeah, but you see, the way we have Labour Weekend, it used to be where we used to rejoice in family time because our elders won a 40-hour week. That is no longer the case, you know, for lots of us. And so as the world changes, we've got to sort of change but not lose our humanity over it.
Well, we have lost our humanity because I can give you an example of somebody working for Downer who's contracted Watercare, who the other day started at 7:30 in the morning and they finished at 1:30 in the morning. Mm. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, that breaks a number of occupation safety health issues.
Well, that's what has to happen to keep the water flowing, not flowing in the wrong places.
Yeah, but not at the expense of that person's health or their family's. But that's what's happening, you see. When I say rorts and corrupt, I find that a rort, right?
Yeah.
That's how I define in New Zealand terms a rort.
Yes.
Where someone has to work those hours away from their families for this long, probably got kiddies and the like. We all have worked big long hours, but not for the type of corporates that we've got at the moment, for the costs that they're applying to everybody.
Well, every fourth week they're on 24/7, and it was every third week.
Right.
And that won't be the only company, and that won't be the only thing that... And the more immigrants that we have, of course, they don't speak up. And so that's why we don't hear about it. We don't hear about what's being done to many people.
Well, you think, you know, look, life's relative, and where they've come from to where they've landed is relative to where they've come from, outstanding. So they don't, and they won't. For them, they don't like rocking a boat either.
Not liking to rock the boat, I think, is very important.
Yeah, you will, because they normally get the bash at home. So the point is...
they're sending money home.
Yeah. Well, they've got to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I get that. So, but, you know, things are... The more you keep these conversations going, the more people will awaken, and it's an awakening that we're after.
Right. Wake Up New Zealand. Mm. I think there's a Facebook page of that name, but... Trouble is, I notice more arguing with people on the left than people on the right, because the people on the left are really committed to getting everything perfect, and so, you know, one person's idea is better than the other person's idea, whereas I find the people on the right are a bit more relaxed and will let it go. You know, we've got the media with us, we've got the
support. Well, it depends what you can afford to let go.
Yes.
And if you've got enough to go up and down with these sorts of cycles and handle things because you've got enough cushions around you, you are less invested. People on the left are often out of some difficulty or are living within it and around it, that are wanting change now rather than tomorrow and the day after. And so people on the left have always been invested in change now, and in the haste to do that, often come to blows with one another.
Yes, it seems very clear. What about the homeless in Auckland? What can be done?
Well, in a country like ours, there shouldn't be any. That's point one. Point two, it's not a ratepayer problem. It is a ratepayer there to support for a solution. So it's a central government issue, no doubt about that. And I personally won't have it on my watch. It's just unacceptable. There are three cohorts. I've had this conversation with you before of homeless. There's those that are so broken and who have been so demeaned and brutalised in their relationships with other humans that they just want to live off the grid. And they'll come out at night and they'll forage, you know, like rodents. And that's how one of them actually described his life for me, to say, no, every time I came out in the light, I've been brutalised, but, you know, sodomised a lot. So they're a very small number. And out west, in my hood, they're around about 25 to 27. They don't create mischief. They're trying to escape it. And they're trying to escape anyone getting tabs on them. The second cohort are those that fall from grace, after marriage breakups, addictions, you name it, and they're in and out, right? And then the third lot are the young, so-called homeless, and they hit the streets normally late November, and then they stay on the streets until around about the end of March. They're the naughty ones, and they create a lot of havoc, right? So you, as long as you understand your hood, and understand who you're dealing with and how to work it, there shouldn't be homelessness, apart from those who have just said are so broken by the way in which everything that should have loved them and cared for them, looked after them, destroyed them, that you'll never fix them. They're mentally unwell as well. But they're not, they don't create harm and vigour, right? It's the other two groups that I've just expressed. They're ultimately state issues. The money that comes into Auckland through all the huge... If you think the CCOs have got problems, you want to have a look at some of these government departments. Yes. They're disgraceful. They're the CCOs on steroids, right? Grubby little people. Anyway, because I've had to work with them for the last 35, 40 years, so you understand it all. So we've got enough money in the system to ensure that there's not a homelessness. There's not begging on the streets of Auckland, because on our watch, we're better than this.
Yes.
Right? And we've allowed this conduct to continue, and we've actually endorsed it, and now we're incentivising it. And so what I'd be doing is changing a whole range of things with central government, where social workers have to work split hours. Okay, social work doesn't start at 9 a.m. and finish at 5 p.m. All of social work's problems actually is on two other shifts outside that time.
Yes.
Right? And that's the time you need people on the street. You don't need police on the street. The police are always sent in to clean up all of the travesties of humanity. But this one of impoverishment of soul and spirit and person, no, we can fix this without using the criminal justice system as a heavy tool. We can fix this. You're not going to fix it by spending $500,000 like Phil Goff did and go out there and try and find them. Because they weren't going to be found. Yeah.
No.
Anyway, so we move on. We can't use them as a whipping board either, and we can't use them to deny them as part of their right to a fair go in New Zealand. But there's a way to fix this, and the way to do that is to acknowledge it's a problem, but no longer acknowledge and incentivise begging and the rest, but by providing them with some care, some protection and some support.
I think that sounds really beautiful, John. And you mentioned earlier about compassion, and I can see you bringing compassion into your own politics and everything that you're doing in your life and your work. So it's been really great to have you in the studio. I'm really grateful that you could come in.
Yeah,
and I hope a lot of people will listen to this interview, because it covers a lot of ground about things that we need to wake up to in New Zealand. So thanks again, John.
Jordy.
You've just been listening to Green Planet on Planet FM. Join us at the same time next week, 8 a.m. Thursdays, or anytime online at greenplanetfm.com.
I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
Or, and Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say, Kia kaha and haere ra. This was a repeat of a previous program.